As demand for fresh local food intensifies, growers are getting more creative about delivering fresh produce outside of the growing season. And you can get in on the act, too. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Chris Curry is an assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. He'll introduce us to indoor home hydroponics, and we'll find out what you would need to do to grow your own fresh greens and herbs in the winter months. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here, and he and Chris will answer your questions about the plants in your life. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and demand for local fresh produce outside of the growing season is growing. So producers are getting more creative about how to grow fresh herbs and greens when the ground is frozen. It turns out you can also follow suit at home. Coming up in a few minutes, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will join us. With me right now is Chris Curry, an assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Chris.
Good morning, Charity. How are you doing today?
Very good. Thank you so much for being here today.
No problem. Happy to be here.
And let's start with a definition of hydroponics. I think a lot of us have maybe a little bit of an idea about it, but it's a bigger world than most of us might think.
Sure. I'm going to get pretty literal with you when you ask for a definition of hydroponics. The root words in hydroponics would be hydro, meaning water, and ponos, to work. So it means working water. That's the actual definition. And we generally apply that term to production systems that require either very frequent irrigation, so several times throughout the day we apply water to the crop, or to crops that are grown simply in water.
All right. And so as a working model, is the definition, does it have to be involving that much water, or is it just the lack of soil that really makes it a hydroponic system?
I tend to take the point of view that it's a lack of mineral soils, because if you see a lot of the tomato and cucumber production, oftentimes we're using a type of substrate for that, like ground husks of coconuts, the coconut coir, or maybe some rock wool. So we're using some type of substrate, but it's not a mineral soil like we have in the fields outdoors. So we are still using a substrate, but you've got it. No mineral soils.
All right. And what is the draw of hydroponics for growers? And not just because you can grow in the winter, but this is something that's been going on for a long time.
Sure. I think it's just an alternative method of producing crops, and it's one that you can use if you have maybe some soils that are less suitable for producing crops. Historically, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon in Mesopotamia, that would be considered hydroponic production. The Aztec culture used what they called floating gardens. They would go into a lake, and they would pen off a certain section and start bringing old vegetative plant tissue and piling it up along with some muck soils to kind of make some raised beds in the lake to expand production. But for current greenhouse producers, I think there's a couple of reasons why it's popular. A lot of times we can recycle the water in hydroponic production, meaning we apply it to the crop, and that water that is not used by the crop, instead of running down the drain, we're often collecting it and treating it to clean it back up, maybe add some mineral nutrients back in there, but then we apply it back to the crop. And so a good statistic is that compared to an open field-produced lettuce crop, hydroponics can reduce the water use by 95% because you're not losing it to leaching or evaporation. It's being used by the crop. So that's one of the big reasons that it's attractive. Also, it's a clean system, so to speak, and not that field production is dirty, no pun intended, but it's easy to control the sanitation of the crop. So with food security concerns, some producers are attracted to the fact that, you know, they can control the sanitation of the employees going in and out of the building and control that environment a little bit more. Because really, hydroponics can be done outside. We see that in Western Australia and in some Eastern European countries. But it's generally associated with greenhouses. And that's where you get that extra level of control.
Is this an area that is growing pretty rapidly right now?
Absolutely. We've had in from 2009 until 2014, we've seen an increase in the protected culture of food crops in the United States. So this definitely is increasing.
And as our culture tends to, or is shifting a little bit, is there an opportunistic moment for hydroponics as well? I think I read that greenhouse space for floriculture is declining. Is this a shift to use that kind of greenhouse space for something else?
Absolutely. Our hardworking greenhouse growers in Iowa are always trying to stay in business and stay ahead of the curve. And for some, the ornamentals is still a really strong market. But for others, it can be a little bit flat, and they're looking to maybe expand or increase their revenue. And as I'm sure you've heard, there's a big interest in local food production. And it's pretty hard to get fresh local foods in Iowa in December, January, and February.
Absolutely. So now, of course, when I go to the grocery store and I go to the produce section, hydroponic tomatoes are probably the thing that I see the most often. That's where I see the label hydroponic. What kinds of things are being grown in Iowa in the winter months hydroponically?
In Iowa, we definitely have producers who are growing hydroponic tomatoes. We also have hydroponic culinary herb growers. We've got folks who are growing hydroponic lettuce. We've seen some cucumbers. You can also grow peppers, eggplants, even small cantaloupes called Chanterelle melons. I haven't seen those yet in Iowa, but I know they are being grown. So you can really grow just about any crop hydroponically that you could grow outside. What you have to think about is if you can get that extra premium for that product. So I don't know if consumers would be willing to pay a premium for hydroponically grown green beans in January. But when you're trying to get that nice ripened tomato that the field grown winter production just can't compete with, there you're able to get a little bit more bang for your buck.
All right. And if I, let's say I buy a hydroponically grown tomato that has been grown in Iowa, is that going to taste like something that was grown in a field in the sunshine in Iowa in the summertime?
Okay, well, that's a debate I'm not sure I want to get into. I'll make this comparison. I don't know how a hydroponic tomato in the winter would stack up to your garden-grown tomato in the summer that you're tending to daily and looking after, but I will bet bottom dollar that a locally grown hydroponic tomato in the winter will taste better than a field-grown tomato in the winter that's been imported and ripened.
All right. Now, let's talk about what people can actually do at home. And we're talking about crops that can be legally grown this hour.
Yep.
So what kind of a setup would you have to grow? And we're going to talk about greens and herbs hydroponically, because growing these vine like cucumbers and tomatoes, growing that at home is not very practical, right?
Yeah, it's not very practical. It just because the crops are so large, they're tall, and they generally have a longer crop cycle, you know, anywhere from 4 months to 12 months, up to a year. The hydroponic production of greens and herbs is just much more well-suited to the home gardener than those vining crops, just because it's easy to put somewhere next to a windowsill in your house compared to those other crops.
All right. Now, of course, a lot of people have herb gardens in their house in the winter anyway, with soil in pots. What makes this an attractive alternative?
Well, it kind of depends. Some people, I think there's a lot of people that are just attracted to the technology, in that it's kind of fun. In fact, I think that a lot of the students that we've got at Iowa State, I've got a course on hydroponic food crop production, and I think that part of the appeal is the technological aspect.
The cool factor. Huh?
Yeah, because it is a pretty neat way of seeing a plant grown. It never ceases to entertain me to see the wonder in people's eyes when you pull a plant out that has been growing in straight water, and they'll say, I didn't know that a plant could grow in water. So I think that's a big part to do with it, is just the technology.
All right. So what would I need if I wanted to have an herb garden in my window at home that's hydroponic?
Sure.
What kind of setup do I need?
Well, we'll start with a plastic storage tote. And really, you can use any size storage tote that you feel comfortable, up a 30-gallon tote down to maybe a 2-gallon tote. And you put the lid on that tote, and you drill some holes that might hold a plastic cup for you. Now, what you want to do then is you want to fill up the reservoir, the bottom of that tote, with a nutrient solution. And that's going to be water plus fertilizer. Now, you want to be careful. You do not want to take water and add your regular garden fertilizer that you may use in the garden or for potted plants. That's got a lot of ammonium nitrogen or ammoniacal nitrogen, and that doesn't do so well in pure water culture. So you want to go on the internet and look for a hydroponic fertilizer, which there are many reputable hydroponic fertilizers that can be used by a homeowner. So you mix up that solution, put it in the tote, you cover it with that lid that you've got those holes drilled in it for the cups that are going to hold your plant. One thing that really helps is to put in an aquarium aerator. You know those little air stones that you might use for an aquarium to keep oxygen in the water? Well, that's what plants need to grow in water. Plants can grow fine in water, provided there is adequate oxygen. If we don't aerate the solution, then the plants are going to decline in health and not grow well because it's that lack of oxygen. But we want to bubble that water to keep oxygen in there. And then once you've got your setup and you're ready to grow, you can germinate your lettuce or your herb seeds in some sort of a germination mix. Those little peat or coconut pellets, you know, you add water and they expand. Those work really well for starting your seedlings for hydroponic production. So once you get your seedlings grown and germinated, you can simply place them in that cup that's sitting in the tote. Now, the key here is to make sure that the bottom of your cups have holes in it, and that those holes are below the level of the water, because we want to make sure that water is getting to the base of that plant or the base of that seedling. And that's a pretty simple hydroponic system that you can easily use in your home.
Now, if you do a search for hydroponic systems, you can find a lot of kits that
yep.
you can buy.
Absolutely.
Do you recommend homemade? Do you like these kits? How do you feel about that?
Well, I would just defer to the individual and what they would like to have in their house. You know, I think some people are really into do-it-yourself, and they wouldn't mind the aesthetic of a plastic tote sitting on there, whereas there might be some people that would prefer something that looks a little bit more designed. Maybe it's got an LED on top, you know, again, kind of appealing to that tech aesthetic. So
right.
you can really do it either way.
Now, you mentioned the LED lights. A lot of these kits come with a light hood, kind of. And you earlier said growing it by the window. What kind of light do you need?
There's an oft-repeated saying in greenhouse crop production that a 1% increase in light equals a 1% increase in growth. So more light is always better, because that's what drives photosynthesis, that produces the sugars in the plant and the carbohydrates that become the cell walls and expand the growth. And that's what's going to give you the mass, because really that's what we're looking for, is we're looking to put on mass on that plant. So really, you want to give it as much light as possible.
All right, so investing in an extra light source is probably going to be worth your while.
It could be, but depending on if you what time of the year it is, you could also grow fine in a south-facing window.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Chris Curry, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Giron will join us in just a moment. We'd also love to hear from you. Chris and Richard are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you can join the conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Chris Curry, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. We've been talking about growing plants hydroponically at home so far this hour. If you have any questions about that, feel free to give us a call. Of course, questions about anything else you want to grow, you can also call us, 866-780-9100. Joining us now is Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And before we get to more questions, I want to ask you, Chris, one of the things I mentioned that you can buy all of these hydroponic kits, and there are a number of different kinds available. There are some pretty hyperbolic claims about these kits. Like one of them grows 5 times faster than soil. Is hydroponic growth faster?
Oh, you're asking the tough questions today, putting me on the spot. I'm gonna say not necessarily. And if we go back to what I said, often hydroponic systems are synonymous with greenhouses. And so it's not necessarily the fact that it's hydroponic versus soil. A lot of the times, I believe that it's in a greenhouse versus outdoors. In a greenhouse, we can provide the exact temperatures that we want. You know, we can stay away from those very warm days that shut down plant growth, but we can also avoid cool nights that slow down plant growth. If it's a cloudy day, we can turn on the supplemental lighting in the greenhouse. So it's much, much less about the hydroponic system, and I think more about the environment that the plant is grown in. And I think that's a nuanced factor that kind of can confuse the discussion a little bit. If you were to bring soil into the greenhouse and grow plants in it, those plants would grow faster than compared to outside because, again, we're controlling the environment that the plants are growing in. Right. But there is something to be said about with a hydroponic system, we're always providing optimal levels of nutrients. So that may give them, the plants, a bit of a boost, but really not much. It's more going to be about the light and the temperature in that controlled environment.
And if someone was going to grow plants hydroponically at home, what would your recommendations be about the right herbs or the right greens to choose?
Well, going back to what we were saying, I think that a really good choice, well, first of all, the popular, most popular herb to grow hydroponically is going to be basil. That's generally what we see is one of the big number ones. So I think that's a good one.
And that's also probably the most sold fresh herb in any store. So is that based on popularity or based on how well it grows?
That's going to be based off of popularity. Okay. But the good thing is it does grow very well. You know, a lot of these things that we use as herbs, they tend to be fairly, I don't want to say aggressive plants, but if any of you have ever tried to control mint in your garden or chives in your garden, you know they're tough plants and they can really grow. I think the best lettuce you can select for hydroponic production is going to be that butterhead lettuce. That is just such a tender and very, very tasty lettuce, and it grows very well in hydroponic culture. That's what most people think of when they think of hydroponic lettuce, and for good reason. It's a great lettuce, and it grows very well in hydroponic systems.
All right, and we talked about how if you want to try the tomatoes or the cucumbers inside your home, that's going to be problematic. It's going to be big. It's going to take a long time. Any other things that you might want to try that wouldn't cause you problems like that?
Absolutely. Well, I would bet that a number of our listeners are already growing hydroponic flowers and may have them on their table right now. If you've ever thought about forcing paper whites in rocks with water, that'd be a type of hydroponic production. So you can grow flowers hydroponically. So nasturtiums or violas, those are great flowers to grow hydroponically and use them as edible flowers.
All right. Well, let's get to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions about hydroponics or about any other plants in your life or plants that you hope to have in your life in the future. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Nadine is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Nadine.
Hi there.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I have a granddaughter who lives in Texas. She considers it, well, they're homesteaders. They have a goat farm, and they use that system.
Okay. So she grows hydroponic plants
yes,
there?
Yes, she does. And what they do is, for fertilizer, they have fish in their water.
All right. And I believe that's technically called aquaponics.
Yep.
Chris, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so in hydroponics, when I was talking about putting together that nutrient solution, we add fertilizer salts to water to make that nutrient solution. With aquaponics, what people are doing is instead of using fertilizer salts to get their nutrients, it's coming from fish waste. And so what happens is they've got fish growing in a tank, and those fish are swimming, they get fed, they produce that waste. That water then, that effluent, is then passed over a bed that's a biological filter and also converts that nitrogen into a form that plants can use. And then once that process has happened, then the water goes into a hydroponic-type system where the plants are growing.
All right.
So that's how what we term aquaponic production, aquaculture plus hydroponics.
All right. And this is getting to be much more popular. And I think there have been a lot of advances in aquaponics in recent years. Am I right about that?
It is becoming more popular. Growers are increasingly interested in it because I think they see the benefits of producing fish and plants. So there is a lot of interest in it, but there are also some challenges that we've really got to overcome because when I mentioned that system, we've got fish, we've got bacteria, and we've got plants, and we've got that solution going across those three life forms. Unfortunately, fish and bacteria and plants all like different conditions. So it can be kind of difficult to accommodate each of them to an optimal level. And so there's still good research happening, and much of it here at Iowa State as well, on how we can improve aquaponic production.
All right. And we've talked about aquaponics on Horticulture Day in the past, so you can look that up and go back to that. We talked about growing strawberries aquaponically on top of an aquarium type setup in the past, and maybe we'll talk about that again in the future. But you're welcome to join with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Richard, here is a question for you. When is a good time to trim a large yew?
Basically, I would do that probably early to mid-April, right before it begins to grow.
All right. And as cold as it's been, are there things we should be thinking about trimming right now?
You can basically prune trees at this point, definitely, especially oaks. The best time is basically December, January, February. But actually, you can go out on a nice winter day and prune any shade tree at this point. And you want to get that done, though, before bud break in the spring.
All right. So maybe if it warms up this weekend, not a bad idea to take care of some of those chores.
Or maybe just scout the landscape, see if you see any rabbit damage, that type of thing.
Right. You can scout it from your window, too, right? With a hot cup of coffee. All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Michael is on the line in Harper. Hi, Michael.
Yes. Thank you, Charity. The comment that was made earlier, it was just on briefly, getting oxygen to the root system. How is that done if it's a tight container?
With an hydroponic system?
Yes, I'm sorry.
What you'll want to do is you get that little aerator stone, and then you've got the plastic tubing that is connected then to that little unit that's generating or that's pushing the air through the tubing into the stone. If you want to have a nice tight fit, some people just lay that tubing on top of the rim of the tub and then just set the lid on there. But if you want to have a nice tight seal, I suggest drilling a hole that is the diameter or slightly larger than the diameter of your plastic tubing and putting that tubing through the lid and then connecting your air stone.
All right. Is it the kind of oxygen that you feed fish bait with?
Yeah, it's the exact same thing. It's using one of those little pumps just to push in ambient air into that solution. So, yeah, if you're in between ice fishing trips when you're trying to keep your minnows alive, you can oxygenate your lettuce.
Perfect.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Michael, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send your questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Chris Curry, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. Next up, we've got Anna on the line in Moline. Hi.
Hi.
What's your question?
Yeah. I have a question. I bought a house, and it has an attached greenhouse. So I walk into it from the basement, and it faces the east. I'm uncertain how to circulate the air. I'm uncertain how to, at this time of year, keep it warm enough without, like, depleting the humidity levels. I did place a very small window in there. In order to circulate it, but I don't even know if that was something I should have done. You open the door in the basement and you're in the greenhouse.
Okay. Anna, would you be willing to take some photos of your setup and email them to me at my Iowa State email address?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, I can give you my email address right now.
Let me grab a pen real quick. I didn't know you were going to give me an email, but okay, yep, got it.
Okay, it is CCURREY, C. Curry, at iastate.edu. And I think if I can get a bit better visual understanding of your greenhouse, I can maybe help you come up with some of the solutions to these problems. And I'm happy to help folks who are in Moline, the hometown of my wife.
Oh, very nice. Would you be able to restate the beginning part of your email?
Yeah, it is C-C-U.
D-C?
C-C. C. Curry.
As in boy or?
C as in cat.
B-C. Yeah.
Yep. You know what? And Anna, I can put you on hold and we can give you the address off the air as well. What are you hoping to grow in your greenhouse?
Well, you know, I eat a lot of organic food. So, you know, lettuce, herbs, peppers, nasturtiums.
Absolutely. And it's fun. Those greenhouses attached to homes are more common in Europe. And so I've definitely seen the home greenhouse gardener in an unheated greenhouse in Europe. And so we can also talk a little bit about crop selection, because you may not be wanting to produce things and trying to heat it during these times, but you can definitely get a jump on the season, as well as provide some protection from rain or insects during the summer to produce maybe a grade A tomato that you want to bring to the state fair.
All right. Well, Anna, stay on hold, and our producer will give you Chris's email address again. And let's get back to the phones. Austin is on the line in Johnston. Hi, Austin.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, I've been doing home hydroponics myself for a while, and there's all sorts of solutions that you can add to your mineral solution for increasing nutrition. My question is there any way to test what I grow to find out what its exact nutritional value is, like the mineral content, whatever?
Are you referring to testing the nutrient solution or testing the nutrient content of your food?
The food.
Yeah, you can. And when you talk about nutrients, are we talking mineral nutrients like nitrogen, potassium, or are you talking about vitamin C and
More of the vitamins, maybe minerals as well, but mostly the vitamin content and whatnot.
Well, if you're interested,
it interested me that you can add all these solution additives that they sell online, and I just wanted to know if they're worthwhile and if it led to an improvement in the nutritive value of the food.
To be honest, I have not seen strong data that support these additives creating a more nutritious final product, as far as having more minerals and nutrients in it that will help your human health. I'm a pretty firm believer that if you provide the right mineral nutrients, your nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, in your nutrient solution, the plant's going to do a great job at creating all of those compounds if you have good light and good temperature as well. So I tend to be skeptical of adding things other than mineral nutrients to a nutrient solution.
All right, Austin, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. You can join our conversation. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jay is on the line in Colfax. Hi, Jay.
Hello. Happy Friday, y'all. I have a bunch of wild rose that my grandparents planted at the end of my driveway in about the 40s. Gotten about waist tall or so. And I'm curious as to how far I can you trim that down, or do I just need to thin it out, let new stuff grow?
These are old-fashioned roses, correct?
Yeah, it's a wild rose.
Okay. Well, basically what you could do is maybe go out there, let's say like in late March, early April, and possibly take out some of the older shoots or stems, the bigger ones, and allow the younger ones to remain, the smaller ones. And that would be kind of a way to maybe rejuvenate the plant, because in response to that, it would send up maybe new shoots. And so you'd have a younger, more vigorous plant. And so pruning out some of the old growth periodically typically is a pretty good procedure.
Okay, so it's more thinning it out than cutting it back type of a deal, huh?
Right, I wouldn't cut back the entire plant. I would just get rid of the older growth and encourage new growth from the base.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Have a good day.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Jay. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We've got Maureen on the line in Tama County. Hi, Maureen.
Hi. I brought in a tomato plant. It had been dug up so many times in the garden, quite a number of them. I managed to save one from a woodchuck, and it was looking good. So I brought it in. Oh, gee. It was clear into the end of September, I believe. You know, we had such a long autumn. And I have a nice, big, steamy shower room, and I plunked it in there by this nice, great, big, huge window. And I have tomatoes on it, and it's full of blossoms, and I hope I'm fertilizing them right with a little Q-tip that I keep fuzzing out the cotton.
Oh, pollinating the flowers.
Yeah, and I have tomatoes on it. I have small tomatoes, and I have one great big one. The last time I looked at it last week, it was green. And the only problem is, and it's also warm. I have a baseboard heat in there. I have to water it a lot because I had it in dirt, so I wasn't about to try to move it into soil. I knew that wouldn't work. My problem was I wanted to buy some determinate tomato plants, and I accidentally got indeterminate. And I think it would have worked out better for me if I could have gotten a determinate plant because it kind of keeps growing like mad. But I'm having problems with, even though it's just baseboard and I don't have it blowing on it, I have problems with some of the leaves growing. But I think it's because I just keep totally underestimating how much water is evaporating.
Yeah, one way you can reduce the amount of watering you have to do, and this is something that's commonly done with the indeterminate tomatoes that are grown in commercial greenhouses, is to pull out those suckers. Now, with an indeterminate tomato, you've got your main stem, and then you've got the leaves or the inflorescences that come branch off that plant. Now, what you want to do...
You know what, Chris, we're going to finish this answer when we get back from a break. So, Maureen, hang on the line. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, Chris Curry, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University and Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and Chris Curry, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. We've been talking a lot about home hydroponic plant growth this hour. We'll also answer your questions about any of the plants in your life. The number to call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I'll just recap what we were doing right before the break because we had to leave an answer in the middle. Maureen in Tama County has a tomato plant that was growing in the garden. She brought it in. It's been growing in her shower room all winter. Lots of blossoms on the tomato plant, and she's having a hard time keeping it wet enough. And it's also an indeterminate tomato plant. So, Chris, can you pick up where we left off?
Absolutely. We're going to try and reduce the burden of watering by reducing the amount of vegetative growth on that plant. So with indeterminate tomatoes, this is kind of my rule of thumb. If you hold out your hand in front of you, you can imagine as though your arm and hand are the stem of the tomato plant. Now, if you stick your thumb out, that's going to be that base of the leaf that's coming off the stem or that base of the inflorescence that's coming off the stem. Now, what a sucker is going to be is anything that comes up between your index finger and your thumb. That's going to be considered a sucker, and we want to pinch those out and prune those off. And that's going to keep that excessive vegetative growth from developing and hopefully reduce the amount of watering that you have to do.
Okay. Now, the question is, I mean, can Maureen actually – Maureen, have you actually been able to harvest tomatoes off this plant?
I already have one that's going to be harvested as soon as the darn thing turns red. I've got some small ones that I've harvested already, about a half a dozen, but I think those were mostly started back in September, first part of October.
All right. So it sounds like things have slowed down a lot. I mean, Chris, it sounds like she's having a lot of fun with this tomato plant. Is this practical?
As long as you're having fun, that's all that matters, right?
All right. And what can she do with this plant in the future?
Well, I think that she can just cut it down and go to her local greenhouse and purchase some new starts next spring.
All right. So trying to take it back outside in the spring probably wouldn't...
It's going to be too big to transplant by that point.
All right. Maureen, thank you so much and keep having fun with it. Next up, we've got Faith on the line in Lauraville. Hello, Faith.
Good morning. I am calling, Charity, because I have an amaryllis blooming. It's in the height of its glory, and I just wonder, is there anything I can do when it's done to save it, put it out in the garden, bring it back again?
Right. You basically have two options. One is to toss it, okay? The other option is to try to get to bloom again next year. And so if you choose that one, you basically want to cut off the flower stalk just above the bulb when it's done blooming. Do not harm the foliage. That foliage is critical. That foliage should get to be eventually 2 or 3 feet long. Put the plant in a sunny window. Treat it like a house plant. Water it thoroughly when the soil surface becomes dry to the touch. Fertilize periodically with a dilute fertilizer solution. And then I would bring it outside around basically mid-May. And when you bring it outside, initially put it in complete shade out of the wind and gradually expose it to some sunlight. And after about a week or 10 days, then I would dig a hole and set the pot in the ground and leave it outside in a sunny location. Keep on watering if it's not raining. Keep on fertilizing periodically. And then I would bring it inside in mid-September or so. And I would bring it inside and put it in a fairly cool, dark location. And I would actually tip it on its side, the pot, and stop watering. And that's going to force it to go dormant, where the foliage eventually turns brown. And when it does, you cut it off. And then it needs to rest for about 8 to 10 weeks at a temperature of 50 to 55 degrees. Those temperatures induce flower formation. And then after that period, you move it to a warmer location, start to water, and it should grow and hopefully bloom.
Oh, great. That is something I can do. I don't like the light, dark poinsettia thing, but
this is more doable, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot, and good luck with that, Faith. And how long can you keep an amaryllis going, do you think, Richard?
Indefinitely.
Indefinitely?
You can do it for several years. If it's going to get bigger, it's going to produce daughter bulbs eventually, you can have that indefinitely.
All right. You can join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's an email from David. He says, as my only house plants, I have 3 10-inch pots in a window with good light and southern exposure. Around this time every year, stalks around 26 inches in height shoot up and bloom with clusters of 3 or 4 flowers about 5 inches across. My great-grandparents brought the bulbs with them when they came to this part of the country in the mid-1800s. During the summer, I leave the 3 pots outside where they get full sun about half the day, occasionally going through near-death experiences when I neglect to provide enough water and it gets really hot. We've always just called them Grandma Lane's lilies, but I was wondering if you might have anything more specific about the type of plant these might be.
Boy, I'm not sure. I think what they could do possibly would be, if they bloom again, take some photos, digital photos, and send those to Iowa State. And they can send those to me, rjauron@iastate.edu. I think we're going to need to see some flowers and maybe some foliage.
All right. That's impressive if they came in the mid-1800s and they're still growing and still blooming. I want to know the backstory of these lilies. You can join our conversation. And David, if you're listening, give us a call and tell us more. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have this tweet from Kelsey. She says, it's hard to listen to Horticulture Friday when it's snowing outside. Bring on the spring. But, you know, we're not too far away. There are some things that are right around the corner. We're going to be starting seeds next month,
yes,
or some seeds, right?
You should be buying seed if you haven't. In fact, I put my order in last weekend. So you need to do that right now, and also maybe get your seed starting supplies indoors as far as Jiffy Mix, maybe some flats, so that type of thing. So it's time to think about buying some things.
All right. Is there anything new you're planning to try this year, Richard?
I'm going to try some new impatiens and some new salvia and possibly some new caladium. So, yeah.
And I know that the downy mildew on all of the impatiens has really hit you very hard. What kinds of impatiens have you been enjoying since all of your others died?
So the old-fashioned, well, the common garden impatiens has the downy mildew. So, but there are the New Guinea impatiens, and they are basically tolerant of that disease. So we can still grow those, no problem. They're kind of harder to find as far as the seed. But they're coming out with some seed in that group. For example, you have the Divine series, seed-grown New Guinean patients. You have the Florific series, also seed-grown. Typically, you'll buy them from cuttings, and those are also available, so you can buy those. And there are also sun, what they call sun patients, which actually do pretty well in the sun. So you can find these plants typically at greenhouses in the spring.
And are you liking them as much as the ones you used to grow?
Well, yes and no, in that they will perform very, very nicely in part shade, just like the old common garden impatient. But in heavy shade, they won't bloom as much. So there's kind of a downside there.
All right. Now, speaking of buying seeds and speaking of starting seeds next month, what are the earliest seeds that need to be started in February?
Well, actually, you would start things like geraniums from seed in January. Also, lisianthus, you would start in January. Once we get into February, things like, for example, pansy, you would start those inside. And then toward, let's say, the end of February, early March, we're talking about salvia, impatiens, that type of thing.
All right. And I'm sure we'll talk about the nuts and bolts of seed starting here in a couple of weeks, as well as a lot of people get underway. And then you do need to wait a little bit longer to start some of the spring vegetables, right?
Yeah, most of those, like tomatoes, grow very quickly. And what most people do is they start a little bit early, and they end up with this huge, humongous plant. Tall and leggy, not the best thing. Tomatoes, you only need about 5 weeks indoors. And so you typically start these around April 1st.
All right. And I know that is a pitfall that a lot of people
yes.
fall into, where you start way too early and then you wind up at the garden center buying
yes. smaller
plants anyway. And Chris, earlier you were talking about, you know, selection of things to grow in greenhouses. A lot of people are buying these small greenhouses, and I know the idea of having a greenhouse is really attractive to a lot of people. Do you recommend that for seed starting, or what would you use a small greenhouse for?
Well, I would use a small greenhouse to house an orchid collection. That's what I would personally do.
And do you have an orchid collection in a small greenhouse?
Well, depending on the time of the year, it waxes and wanes how many orchids I've got. But right now it's down to just a handful right now. But if it was a heated greenhouse, I would probably tend to grow more tropical or exotic plants. And if it was an unheated greenhouse like Anna's that she described earlier, then I might focus more on seasonal crops like the outdoor flowers and vegetables.
All right. And you mentioned growing prize vegetables inside the greenhouse. What's the advantage there?
Well, it's really just, again, using that protected structure. And this would be like those greenhouse or like those growers, field vegetable growers, who are using high tunnels to grow their tomatoes, maybe to get an earlier tomato, or the people who are using high tunnels to grow cut flowers so they don't get blemished from or beaten up from the rain or less insect pressure. So it's just using a bit more of a protected structure to kind of baby those plants a little bit more.
All right. And we have an email question here. And, of course, you can send your email question to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I just clicked away from here. We go. Gina says, I inherited, and I may say this wrong, I inherited some old cloches from my grandmother. My grandmother would keep plants in them when I was a child, especially in the winter. And there was always a forest in her living room. Everything I seem to put in them dies. I had them in a south window. What am I doing wrong?
Well, the south window, I'm not sure, but that could be, depending on the time of the year, a south window facing that cloture. And if you're trying to imagine a cloture, it's kind of like a mini greenhouse. It's just a glass bell that you would put over the plant. And if you have a lot of south sun, and if it might be the summer, it could be actually getting quite hot under there. So that may be part of the problem, but without having a better knowledge of what plants you were growing, I'm not quite sure.
Okay, and so what would be the proper application of one of these?
They were commonly used to maybe start something outdoors early, where you might plant, for example, tomatoes early in the spring, earlier than normal. And if we were going to have some cool weather, you might cover them with that cloche to to keep it warmer so they could survive the cold weather.
All right, so that's the kind of thing we see people doing with milk jugs over
right,
a tomato
right,
plant.
Right, right.
All right. Mm-hmm. All right, Jan is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Jan.
Hi, good morning. I would like to become more adventuresome in the seeds that I plant, particularly cut flowers. And I'm having difficulty. The seed catalogs have a wonderful variety and are very tempting, but I'm having trouble finding out which seeds are easy, medium, or challenging to grow from seed, which plants. Is there a listing online that lists a wide variety of flowers and vegetables that would tell me?
Yeah, so there for flowers, there are a couple of resources, and one that comes to mind is an extension publication that was put out by, I think it was Kansas State University, by Alan Stevens. And if you go to a search engine and enter specialty cut flower production, if you scroll down, I think within that first page, you should find a link to an extension bulletin on specialty cut flower production. And I believe there are going to be some recommendations in there, not just species, but also the cultivars, specific cultivars.
Exactly. Exactly.
And Jan, are you looking for easy, medium, or difficult?
I'm beyond easy, but I I attempted to grow snapdragons from seed. I'll never try that again. I mean, that when they come up, their stems are literally the diameter of a human hair. So things like that are helpful to know before you end in frustration.
Right. Well, good luck, and I hope you have some wonderful adventures this spring.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Thanks a lot for your call. And a final question today. This is from Jordan. I transplanted about 80 wild black raspberries a few years ago from a wild patch. They produced great this past season but need some pruning. Is it too early to prune them now?
I wouldn't prune them now. Basically, your raspberries are biennial as far as the canes. And so typically what you want to do is when the canes are done producing for the year, go out there and prune them off at the ground and remove them from the area and destroy them. And every spring you'll have new shoots coming up from the base. So if you keep on doing that, that's basically what you need to do.
Okay, so he's late for that, but is there anything he can do before spring?
Well, if he hasn't removed last year's fruiting canes, he can do that now, definitely.
All right. So
otherwise, just leave them.
Okay. And it's not going to damage them to do the work that maybe you
right.
could have done back in October or something like that now.
Right. Right. The canes that came up last year will bear fruit this year.
So. All right. And that's impressive to have that kind of success. A lot of people have a really hard time cultivating wild black raspberries.
Yeah. The wild ones typically, when you actually try to grow them, don't do well usually.
All right. Well, well done, Jordan. And we will be back not next Friday, but the week after with Horticulture Day. And, of course, we'll be back on weekly starting in March as the growing season gets very close. Richard Duran, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran. And Chris Curry, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate the invitation.
Come back anytime. Chris Curry is an assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Talk of Iowa is produced by Lindsay Moon, Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can email us anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'd love to hear your suggestions for things you'd like to hear on the show. We'd love to hear your thoughts about things you've heard on the show. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Have a great weekend.